Hello, and welcome to the Literati Cast. I'm Jennifer Loughran, and I'm a senior agent at the Andrea Brown Literary Agency, where I rep children's books from picture books through YA and everything in between. I get a lot of questions about queries and about getting an agent, of course, but from authors who are already agented or published, I get more questions about publicity and marketing than pretty much anything else. These worlds can be very mysterious. So in the next couple of episodes, I'll be speaking to a publicist and a marketing person to get their perspective and a look behind the curtain at what the heck they actually do and how you can help them do it. First up, my guest today is a renowned publicist whose decades-long career behind the scenes at major publishers like HarperCollins and Scholastic helped launch some of the most iconic books in the children's book world. Like, you remember a little book called The Hunger Games? You've heard of it because of Tracy Van Stratton. She would probably dispute that because, like all great publicists, she prefers to stay firmly behind the scenes. But she's not here while I'm recording this intro, so I can say what I want. Anyway, Tracy is a legend in the publicity world, and she recently opened her own private publicity firm, TVS Media Group, where she continues to work with authors and publishers to boost their books and brands. And she has kindly agreed to answer my absolute Dead Sea Scrolls length list of questions. Let me see if I can get Tracy on the line. Hi, Tracy.
Hi, Jen.
Before we get started, can you give us the nutshell version of your career path?
Sure. I guess I would say that I graduated from college. I was an English major living in Chicago who wanted to get into book publishing, which was not really the greatest thing. This was pre-internet, which is hard for a lot of people to understand. So information was scarce. And I really wanted to get into children's books. I did know that part. And all I knew that existed were editors. And I knew I didn't want to go to New York. So I moved to Boston to try to find a job in children's books, which was a little odd, but actually worked. And I ended up getting an internship at Little Brown in the coffee table book editorial department. Someone was on maternity leave, and I wrote a lot of rejection letters for coffee table books about people's cats and things like that. And which actually was kind of a really great lesson in spin, because you had to come up with something positive about it and then, you know, let them down gently. And everyone I met, I sort of said, hi, I'm Tracy, and I really want to be in children's books. And right around the time that the internship was ending, the publicity and marketing assistant in children's books announced that she was moving to New York. And I ended up getting that job. And I really didn't even know what publicity or marketing were, but I would have done anything in children's books. And as it turned out, it was a really happy accident, because I think it was a perfect fit for all of my interests and skills. And I absolutely loved it. So that was my first job in children's books. And while I was in Boston, I ended up getting the children's literature master's at Simmons. So I was doing that while I was working. And then after about 4 years at Little Brown, I realized that if I really wanted to grow, I was going to have to go to New York. So I did. And I applied for a job as a publicist at HarperCollins Children's and got it and moved, and then had subsequent publicity jobs at William Morrow and Simon & Schuster Children's, and then the last 13 years at Scholastic, where I also oversaw educational marketing in addition to publicity. How's that? Thumbnail.
Great. Perfect. That's a nutshell. I know that this question has been asked and answered on this podcast in the past, but I think it's a super important distinction. Just so we're all on the same page before we really begin, what is the difference between publicity and marketing?
Ah, yes. There's lots of confusion. And as I said, when I started, I never heard of either one. So there's a lot of gray area and a lot of overlap. And different companies are different. But at the very simplest definition, publicity, generally speaking, covers free or earned consumer media coverage, which are book reviews, interviews, and other editorial coverage of books and authors. And then public events, like bookstore events, public festivals, things that are usually open to the public. Marketing is a very big bucket and basically includes things that cost money. Not to say that publicity can't, like author travel or hotels or that kind of thing. It's not like there's no money spent, but the actual media coverage doesn't cost anything. And marketing includes things like advertising, promotional items like bookmarks and posters and floor displays and in-store signage, book trailers, creating anything that helps the publisher sales team sell a book in. So maybe a brochure or a sell sheet. And then in children, specifically on the educational marketing side, things like exhibiting at conferences, educator and discussion guides, submitting to awards, and marketing to educators and librarians.
Awesome. So you were an in-house publicist for many years, and now you're an outside publicist. So how has your job changed since making a leap to freelance?
Well, I would say that, you know, my role, which evolved over time when I was in-house, you know, a large part of my job always was I was still being a publicist, but then, which was always my favorite part of the job. But then a lot of my job sort of morphed into more of a management role, and which I also really liked, but it wasn't as much doing the publicity. And so one of the biggest differences now is that I'm spending a lot more time doing actual publicity and not some of that other management stuff. But one of the biggest differences just in general, I think, is that an inside publicist is really can be involved with or is at least aware of a book from the time it's acquired, which could be years before it comes out. And they get to see the progression from the manuscript, you know, if it's a picture book, to having the illustrations added to the cover. And if you're in-house, you can help shape the publishing and publicity strategy for a book long in advance. If you're outside, usually you're coming to the project much closer to publication time, and it's sort of already a finished thing. And someone is giving it to you and saying, here, now you have to get publicity for this. And so so that's different. Another thing in-house is that often publicists develop a relationship with an author or a series of authors and work with them over a long period of time. And, you know, across many years, across many books, helping them and their career grow. And I think if you're an outside publicist, while that can happen, you know, often it's more project to project. And I think, I mean, I'm very fortunate right now because I'm working with some authors who I've actually worked with before over a long period of time, which is great. But I'm also working with some authors that I've never worked with before. And again, coming to it a little bit later. But it's exciting because I have an opportunity to work with authors from a variety of houses and also working with the different departments at a variety of houses, which is fun and interesting and different for me.
And you get to choose.
Yes, that's true.
I mean, not that you wouldn't have chosen the books that you worked on in-house, but, you know, like sometimes things probably were just given to you, like assigned to you, right? Like,
yeah, that's definitely true. I will say that, you know, over time, especially when I was heading up a department of publicists, I did always take people's interests and choices into great consideration because I always think a publicist will do a better job if they're excited about something. I mean, we once had a publicist who was, you know, super into horror and ghost stories, and it became the in-house joke that anything that was even remotely like that was absolutely going to her. and, you know, because she did such a good job and was really passionate about it. And there were always, you know, folks that, oh, I love YA sci-fi and, you know, oh, I love literary middle grade. And, you know, so, and, but of course you can't always choose what you're working on. And then other times you're working with the same author. And of course, authors, you take on all kinds of different projects and those change too. But yes, I definitely do have an opportunity to choose what you're working on, which is a luxury.
So a lot of times the things that the in-house publicity folks do is very much behind the scenes. So much so that authors sometimes, bless them, complain that nothing is being done or they have no publicist or something like that. Things are being done. We just can't see them all the time. So what are some of these mysterious things that those in-house publicists do or should do for every book?
Yeah, this is, I like to always say that the shoemaker's elves are doing a lot of work in the night on your behalf that you don't see. And it is a leap of faith. And sometimes in the absence of evidence, it feels like there's nothing. And, you know, you're going to hear me start to talk about this quite a bit, that, you know, communication between authors and their house, whether it's their editor or their publicist or somebody else, is just so important. And I think a lot of assumptions are made. And, you know, I talked to an author recently and she said, oh, you know, I have this book, it's a series, it's coming out. My publisher isn't doing anything really. And I said, well, how do you know? Did you get a marketing plan or did you talk to somebody? Well, I just figured that, you know, I haven't heard anything, so they're not doing anything. And that's, you know, I said, well, you should ask, you should find out what the plans are and then, you know, make determinations after you know that. And again, sure, they're big houses, they're small houses, budgets are different. Houses aren't all going to do the same thing. And some are going to have a big marketing plan for a book and some are going to have a small marketing plan for a book. But, you know, there's this myth, there's no such thing as no marketing for a book and no publicity for a book. It just may not be immediately obvious to you. The other thing that I used to say a lot, and this used to happen all the time, is an editor would call and they would say, you know, such and so author wants to be connected with their publicist. They have publicity questions. And I would say, great. What are some of the questions that they have? And the editor would say, I don't know. I said, well, why don't you go find out what the questions are? And they would come back. And the questions were, you know, about XYZ convention, an award submission, and if there were going to be any advertising. And I would say, well, those are really good questions, but actually none of those is handled by publicity. And the thing is, everybody wants to know who their publicist is, but nobody wants to know who their marketingist is. and you know, of course, there can be many different people in marketing handling all those different things. And you actually don't even need to necessarily speak to someone in marketing to get answers to those questions. But there's this assumption that it's all under publicity, which it isn't. And also, just because you're not talking to your publicist doesn't mean that she's not doing a lot on your behalf. So in answer to what are all the things that are happening in the night? It depends on the size of the house, of course. The larger the house, the more specific the jobs are usually. At a small house, the publicist and marketer could be the same person. There could be one person who does all of that for everybody. And most houses have lists of things that they do for every book. Most houses have some sort of automatic process where the books are sent automatically to all of the major journals and, you know, major outlets like the New York Times. And a lot of that stuff just happens automatically. It may not even be your publicist who does it, but it's a sort of a machine, especially the bigger the house is. And so, you know, you can usually rest assured that that kind of thing is happening. Publicists are creating press materials and they're, you know, ideally they are hand selecting a list of media outlets that are appropriate for your book. You know, there aren't really one size fits all lists that work for picture books and YA, for example. A lot of houses have a picture book list, a middle grade list, a YA list, and you can sort of start with that as your common denominator baseline, but then you can add other media depending on what the book is about. You know, is it sci-fi? Well, there are certain outlets that are really excited about sci-fi. Is it, you know, LGBTQIA? Is it of African American interest? Is it a gardening book? Is it a sports book? You know, depending on what it is, you will then add on other media that makes sense. Also, where does the author live? You know, if New York City is your local market, that's not going to maybe get local coverage. But if you live in, you know, Iowa, you could get a big feature story, depending. So the publicists are developing these lists, but, you know, they're not necessarily going to be reporting back on, yes, I followed up with this person and they weren't interested. And so, you know, sometimes the press doesn't ever even respond. Even if you do a follow-up and you call or you email, they still don't respond. And then a review appears, you know, so even not getting a response doesn't mean that it's not going to get covered, but the publicist doesn't have anything necessarily to report. Sometimes the best answer you'll get is, thanks, we'll take a look. That's like a hugely favorable response from some media, which is basically saying, yeah, we have it here. And what the publicist is really trying to do is just to get them to put it higher on their to read pile or just to make sure it's on their radar. And so there's a lot of that stuff happening, but it's not tangible that you can necessarily point to that's happening. And sometimes, you know, that all of that pitching and following up and explaining, and, you know, some publicity departments have in-person meetings with press where they're also going through the list and talking about things. I always say that being a publicist is a little bit like being a lawyer building a case where, you know, you say, oh, this book is really awesome. And they say, uh-huh. And then you say, remember that awesome book I told you about? It got a star review in PW. That's interesting. You know, hey, remember that awesome book? It has a star in PW and a star in Kirkus. And you just, you know, it's one to watch and it just got an Indie Next or, you know, something like that. And you know, you have to, the trick is to not be annoying, but to be helpful. And then sometimes they might still not cover it, but then that author's next book comes out a year later and you have that meeting and you say, remember that book? Well, here's all the awesome stuff, but here's their new book. And we're, you know, the print run's even bigger than it was last time and we're more excited. And so it can take 2 years, 3 years, a couple books of kind of you know, introducing that to a journalist or a producer before they start to pay attention. And so it can be, you know, it may not pay off until the second or third book, but all of that groundwork that you're laying in the beginning can have an impact later. So some patience is involved too.
I saw this article the other day that was talking about how the New York Times gets books in for review. Mm-hmm. And they showed this like cavern of books that are like, oh, this is just what we got this week. And it was like literally a warehouse full of books. It was very daunting.
It is, and of course, very daunting.
They only review like 4 picture books a month.
Right.
So, you know, anyway.
Yeah, it's very hard, you know, and then a lot of times they send things out for review and then they end up where they just don't have space and things get cut for space. I mean, I've had actual segments that have been recorded with major outlets like NPR and the Today Show that never saw the light of day. And, you know, so publicists are sort of superstitious until it actually runs. You don't want to talk about it.
Well, yeah, I know on NPR, if any news thing happens, they will cut, you know, books are fluff to be cut if there's news.
Yeah, breaking news is brutal. It's, you know, whenever anything like that happens, you sort of out of solidarity, you think, oh, whatever books went on sale today, oh my, I'm so sorry. You know, and I mean, there are already, and I mean, this is much more in sort of the adult nonfiction space, but, you know, jokes on Twitter about, you know, who's brave enough to publish a book in October of 2020? Nobody. I mean, it's just, you know, and that's not going to be because of the election, and it's not going to be as big a factor for certain children's books, but for certain outlets, I mean, you know, there are certain times in a news cycle where, you know, I've had situations where, well, you know, until the Olympics are over, we can't talk to you at NBC, or, you know, things like that, that you don't necessarily think about, because it's not like at some of the major outlets that there's a separate person handling children's books or books. And even when they are, you know, at National Public Radio, it's all hands on deck for things like an impeachment. I mean, it's just, because at the end of the day, it's a news organization.
Right. So when is the right time for an author to start thinking about publicity and coordinating with their publicist?
I think the right time to start thinking about it is 6 to 8 months probably before pub date. And again, this is going to get back to communication. And this, you know, this factors with a lot of the different kinds of questions about this. You know, not every house is the same. So whether you're a debut who's really trying to educate yourself on just how the industry and the business works, or whether you've published at many different houses before, when you're publishing with a house for the first time, you should not be making assumptions that they all work the same way. So I think it's really important. And, you know, your agent can absolutely ask these questions of your editor, or you can ask your editor, you know, hi, what's happening with my book? And, you know, not in an accusatory way, but in a fact-finding way. And that's really important, because sometimes I think, you know, editors are, you know, I don't know, uncomfortable or feel, but, you know, well, it's not a big, you know, thing. And that's okay. I mean, whatever the answer is, you know, is it a standard marketing plan? Great. What is this publisher's standard marketing plan? Because it might not be the same as another publisher's standard marketing plan. What are the things? And once you sort of know what those things are, then you can ask questions about, well, what about all these other things? And is it okay if I pursue these things on my own? And the publisher will happily let you know if things are stepping on toes or not. And again, it really just needs to be two-way communication, because I think there is a lot that authors can do on their own, but they can do it in partnership with their publisher rather than in opposition to their publisher, which I think is really important. And I think the expectations are very important of, you know, also expectations, you know, for your book. And then you can determine whether you want to seek out additional help or if there are things that you can do on your own.
How can authors, and maybe agents too, make the publicist's job easier? Like, what are top tips for author best practices?
The main thing is to really remember that you're on the same team. And I think that sometimes that gets a little bit lost. And so again, it's just asking questions so that you're on the same page. You know, this same author who I talked to who told me that nothing was happening, even though she did, I think, have the name of a publicist, but she hadn't been connected to her, said, well, I'm going to go and, you know, walk into all these different bookstores in, you know, her area. And I said, well, have you let the publicist know you're going to do that? And she said, well, no, why should I do that? And I said, well, I think that's a good idea because you might want to just make sure maybe they've already reached out to them about events. Maybe they haven't, but she might say, well, if you're going to do that, that's awesome. Definitely give them my information so that if they want to set up an event that they call me. And it was, she just was surprised. And I said, you know, again, you're a team. You're a team. It's no one's telling you, you shouldn't do this. You should, but there are ways that you can do it where it's collaborative. Whereas otherwise, you know, they're going to walk in and then you get, you know, the bookseller then emails the sales rep and says, well, your author came in and what's the deal with that? And you know what I mean? So it's not a unified approach.
Right. They could also make sure that those bookstores actually have your book and you could sign stock.
Correct.
If the and, book's you know, out
has
already.
Been, and has it already been sold in? You know, the rep may not have had their appointment to tell the bookseller about it yet. And so if you're going to walk in and introduce yourself, you should wait until that sales call has happened.
So or, you know, bring an ARC if it's months away.
Right.
I mean, when I was a bookseller, I always thought it was really cool when local authors introduced themselves, but it's like amazing if they can do so with information for me, right. You know, like, hey, I'm local. This is my book. I love to do school visits. This is what I enjoy talking about. Like, you know, whatever. Hey, here's some cookies. Yay.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And not to make the bookseller feel pressured, but just to let them know that you're local and that you're around for whatever opportunities might present themselves. You know, similarly, again, there's so many things that authors do on their own, but, you know, to let the publicist know, you know, before you decide to arrange a cover reveal or before you decide to arrange an interview and agree to it, just to make sure that it's not conflicting with any plans that the publisher has. It probably won't, but it could. And it's just good to make sure before you go ahead and do those things, because after the fact, it's really hard to fix it if there's a conflict. The other thing is, again, I'm such a huge fan of asking questions, but sometimes, you know, there have been authors that, you know, every time they have a question, they fire off an email, and publicists can feel really besieged by that, especially because, you know, they have busy days, and also things get lost really easily when you do that. And so I always, and this is, you know, if you're in regular touch with your publicist, obviously not if it's time sensitive, but I recommend, you know, start an email on Monday and add questions to it throughout the week and then send it on Friday so that it's all in one place. It's one email. And then the publicist can thoughtfully go through and answer all the questions at the same time. I mean, again, don't hold time-sensitive information, but I think that that's a really great way of not peppering somebody with a million questions. So that's a tip.
I mean, I will say, I think that waiting until Friday afternoon is not the best idea.
Well,
like maybe
whatever, Wednesday or something. I'm just saying, yeah. You know, to batch them together.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, also to set up a call sort of at the beginning of the season, like once you find out who your publicist is going to be, having a call, because sometimes an actual person-to-person phone call is just, you know, it's just better than a bunch of emails where things can be misinterpreted, and have an actual conversation so that you're on the same page and you understand what's happening and you understand what is the publicist doing and then what should you be doing and how can you help the publicist do her job. Something else that to me is something that is also a really good, there's that horrible period of time after the book has been submitted and before you're doing any kind of publicity or marketing activities, that's just this big empty space of months that authors get very stressed out about, you know, before any of the reviews have appeared. And I would say that this is a really great time to channel some of that into creating a spreadsheet that includes as much of the following information as you possibly can. You know, what's your alumni publication with your graduation year and what you majored in and the contact information that your publicist can send to? Because all alumni magazines are interested in what their alumni are doing. Most of them have book sections. That's a great thing. You know, what's your local bookstore? Do you have a relationship with the bookstore? Some publishers have Q&As that ask a lot of these questions, but they also sometimes ask them much earlier in the process, and then things have changed by the time, you know, publication's about to happen. You know, any friends or connections you have in the media, not just, oh, I know X at the New York Times, but, you know, do you really know them? Are they your next door neighbor? Were they your college roommate? If you know somebody in the media, that's important information. other reviewers who've reviewed your work favorably in the past. That's really helpful information for publicists, because especially if you've published at another house, they're not going to have that information. But knowing that such and so is a fan of your work is just incredibly helpful information. Local media in your hometown. You know the local noon news or morning show in your town, or the influential NPR host who sometimes covers books. That's the kind of information that publicists can spend a lot of time researching, but it's never the same as if you actually live there and know what are the things that everybody listens to. That's really helpful shortcut information. Any media contacts that are specific to the topic of your book? Did you do a lot of research? You know, is there a magazine about, you know, did you write a book about bees and beekeepers? Well, great. Is there a magazine about that? There probably is. Are there blogs that are really important in the world of beekeeping? A general children's book publicist is not going to know that. She can look stuff up, but if you have that area of expertise or you have an inside line into a certain area, we really want to know about it, because that can help us get to people who are going to be excited about your book. Educators you know personally, and other authors who either you know personally or who really like your work or have liked it in the past that can be sent to, and provide as many addresses as you can. Obviously, you may not have all of those, but if that's all gathered together in a spreadsheet, the nice thing is that at the publishing company, sometimes the publicist and the marketer are the same person. Sometimes they're not. Some of these might be handled by editorial, some by, you know, education library marketing, some by publicity, but they can easily divide it up and get it to the right people at the house. But that is just enormously helpful information to set everything in the right direction.
That's great. I would also say, during that lag time, guys, when you have that, I sold the book, but nothing's happening yet, and it's not going to come out for a year. Like, maybe that's a great time to also revamp your website.
Oh, yes. please do that.
You know, have a page on there that has a high-res photo of yourself and a high-res photo of the book jacket when it's available, and great reviews you've gotten. I mean, a press kit on there, a little bio, all on one page.
Exactly. There's so many requests for a press kit on your website. Again, with a downloadable high-res bio, I mean, a photo of yourself, your book covers. I can't tell you how many authors I go to look at their sites and they don't have their new book listed. You know, it's information from 2 years ago and they haven't gotten around to it, or the book all of a sudden has 3-starred reviews and they haven't been added to the website. You definitely want to make sure that you have a website where either you have a very responsive person administering it for you, or you are able to make those changes yourself quickly, because you really want it to be up to date. But yes, having an updated bio and a professional bio that's not super cutesy, one that's written in the third person that a journalist can actually look to and get information. You can have cutesy things also, but you should absolutely have, some authors have a short bio and a long bio, but something that, you know, is really digestible for a journalist to look at.
Yeah.
Or an event coordinator, you know, that they can paste into, or a bookstore, like that they can just take it and paste it into their thing. That's a really, really important tool. And so, yes, that's a great thing. And I would recommend, and I'm, you know, say this about a lot of different things, but look at other author websites, you know, look around and see which you think are the most user-friendly and present the information in the best way. But that's, yes, absolutely, one of the most important things you can do.
So aside from, you know, like getting in trouble or being a menace in public or whatever, aside from the obvious things, like, I don't know, getting arrested or something, what are ordinary things that authors do that make their publicist wince?
Maybe things
that are just not a good use of time or money too.
But yeah, there is that. I mean, one of the things I was going to say, and you could spin this as a positive or a negative, but it sort of works as both, is especially for authors who publish with other houses, you know, to just make sure that all of your publishers know what is happening. Like, if you're going to a conference with one publisher, make sure your other publisher knows. You know, there might be this thinking like, oh, they're competitors, or that, like, we share information. We work really collaboratively together. And if you're being sent to the conference by publisher A and publisher B has a booth there, you might be able to sign your book at that publisher's booth also, you know, your other book. So make sure that you're not sort of keeping that information. And one of the things that I was going to say you could do, and again, this is better for authors that do a lot of traveling and school visits and that kind of thing, is maybe set up a Google calendar that your publicist can have access to, or that the school visit person or educational library person, depending on who you're working with the most, can have access to. And so I guess what I would say is something, you know, that make a publicist wince is when you find out that they were somewhere that day, because it's a missed opportunity, and that's just a bummer.
Well, and the other publisher B might well help support you and like invite you to a cocktail party or
exactly,
you know, exactly. Whatever. I mean, there are
right, that happens all the time. Well, we can't feature you on our panel, but we are having a dinner and you should come, and then you can meet important people at that dinner. So yes, it's that stuff. That's the kind of stuff where you think, oh, if we've known. You know, don't plan interviews or reveals without telling the publisher that you're doing that. That definitely. Another thing, a wince thing, is don't contact the media directly. Most press really don't want to be hearing from the authors directly. It puts them in a very uncomfortable spot. They really want to hear from the publisher. Now, the one exception I guess I would have to that is, you know, if you're really publishing with such a small publisher that they don't have a publicity department or they're not doing anything, I would still ask before you do that. But most, you know, the review journals do not want to hear from authors directly. You know, places like the New York Times don't, they just, that's not how they prefer to be approached. So that's something I would not recommend. I would discourage venting online about a negative review. I would not do that. You can vent to your family and your friends and your publicist and your editor and your agent, but I would not do that publicly. And then when you were saying things that weren't a good use of money or time, I think that's really true. I think there are, you know, a lot of authors look around and they see what a lot of other authors are doing and they think, oh, I want to be doing that. Or, you know, I'm going to send myself on a 9-city DIY tour and it's free and I'm going to do that. And, you know, I'm going to sleep on my friends' couches and whatever. And, you know, sometimes that can be productive. Other times it's not. And there are a lot of sort of back end things. You know, they say, oh, well, it's no work for the publisher, but it actually is. It can be work for a bookseller. It's work for the sales rep, because ultimately they're placing an order. And if a lot of people aren't going to come, it's not necessarily a good use of time. You know, you might be better off channeling your energy into doing school visits, which have, you know, a large audience involved. It involves a lot of pre-sales and pre-ordering. You know, that can end up doing more for sales than traveling around and doing bookstore events where three people come. I worked with an author who had, you know, family and friends in very specific cities, and she went around and she was able to really produce about 25 to 50 people at each of the events that she set up. That was a good use of time. But a lot of times it's not. And so again, I think conversations with your publisher, hey, I'm thinking of doing this. Is this a good idea? Is this a good use of my time and my money? And the same is true with hiring a publicist. A lot of times an author would say, oh, I went ahead and hired this publicist. And then you'd sort of say, well, what are your goals for the publicist to do? And they were things that the house was going to do anyway.
Right. So having been on both sides of that publicist fence, which authors and at what point do you think it is useful to hire an outside publicist?
Well, it's funny because I'm coming off of almost 30 years of being on the other side of the desk. And so I'm definitely very mindful of that. And, you know, if anything, I'm really interested in authors learning how to work with the publicists they already have. I think that is something that can really be improved. I think you have a publicist, just figure out, you know, what is the best way to get the most out of that publicist. And then, you know, really thinking about where, once you know what they are doing, you can determine what isn't being done and if those things might or might not really drive sales. And, you know, is it worth whatever this publicist is going to charge for you to do a blog tour? I don't know. maybe yes, maybe no. That's something you have to decide. You also have to, you know, so when I think it makes sense, I guess that was your question. I think it can make sense if an author publishes with multiple houses and has multiple books coming out, because a publicist usually is pretty limited to pitching her book from her house. And she's not going to pitch, oh, you know, this author has these three books coming out this year. So I think that that can have value if you're really trying to tell a bigger story. If an author has a brand or profile beyond their books that's interesting, where it's more either the world of that person or their day job, which somehow complements their books in a way that sort of extends beyond what a house publicist is, you know, who's a book publicist is going to be able to pitch, that can be a time that it would be good. You know, if there's a film project or something that makes it much bigger, that could be a time. I guess if you're publishing with a house that literally does not have publicity at all, then that might be something you want to consider. You know, one of the things that I've been developing in my new life, in my new role, is I'm doing a lot of author consultations, which are sort of one day, couple hour call consultations with authors to really go over their goals and their brand and what is the marketing plan with their publisher and what activities maybe make sense for them to do based on where they want to go. And again, to help determine some strategy and develop plans where it's really a publicist consultant, but not, I'm not out pitching their books, because usually there is somebody to do that.
Right. I mean, I think that could be insanely helpful for people because they have so many questions that, I mean, I, as an agent, I can help and answer them, and your editor can be a point person and help a lot too. But, yeah. But like, especially if there's not much in the way of a publicity department, you know, it's somebody right. who's more on their own, like, or if it's just somebody who has, you know, at some of the huge publishers, it can be a bit daunting. You don't necessarily ever get any FaceTime with your publicist, even though they exist. Mm-hmm. They don't really want to talk to you per se. That has happened to me. So I think just have somebody to ask those questions would be very helpful.
Yeah, it's been really helpful. And I've done it with debut authors, and I've done it with pretty established authors. And it's been kind of remarkable the kinds of questions that they have. And, you know, there is this kind of intimidation factor of, well, what is reasonable for me to be asking for and what isn't? And, you know, helping to determine that. And then also, you know, again, what is going to be the most effective thing for me? You know, if you're really in this as a career, it's a slow and steady wins the race, a marathon, not a sprint kind of thing. And a lot of the authors that are huge right now did not just burst out of the ether. You know, they've been hammering at this for many, 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 many years, and it is a build. And, you know, maybe it's their third book, maybe it's their 10th book, maybe it's their 20th book where they really break through or get to a different level. And, you know, some of them have been doing school visits for a decade, and that's mostly what they were doing. And they never went on a traditional bookstore tour. And then all of a sudden their publisher did that, and bang, they're, you know, at a different level. But it's because they did all that groundwork, or they won a bunch of state awards. And some of these aren't the most sexy things that you see out there, but they can actually sell more units than more flash in the pan kind of thing.
Absolutely. I mean, I think my best selling authors, like in the long term, that have like the sustainable careers, get big royalty checks and whatever, they've never hit the New York Times bestseller list.
Right. But they probably have won 10 state awards.
Yeah, exactly. And they keep coming out with new books.
Right. Right. And it's the consistency.
I had an interesting conversation the other day. Somebody asked me, they had hired an outside publicist, and they were like, oh, well, I don't really want to step on the publisher's toes. So I don't want to tell them that I'm hiring this other person. And I was like, whoa, hey, I think you also don't want to reinvent the wheel and have your outside publicist that you're paying a lot of money to
right.
do this, you know, redouble efforts that the publisher's already doing. So I guess, how does an outside publicist work with a publisher so you're not stepping on toes or or reinventing the wheel.
Right. Like, well, we would do that all the time. And now I'm on the other side doing it. I mean, again, I think the first step is to establish what is the publisher doing. And then to even just say, hey, I'm interested in hiring outside help. And, you know, again, identify what are your goals? What are you trying to achieve? What do you want that publicist to do? Because if you are going to spend the money to hire an outside person, they should be doing something that is adding to what the publisher is doing, not the same thing. You don't want them all pitching the same blogs, the same newspapers, the same whatever. I mean, it's annoying for whoever the recipient is of that. And it's counterproductive because it's happening anyway. So, you know, but once you've made the decision and you've sort of carved out what the buckets are that the freelancer is doing versus the in-house person, you know, we would work very seamlessly together. But again, the key is to set up the parameters of, you know, your in-house person is going to do these things and your external person is going to focus in these other areas. You know, maybe your in-house publicist is really strong with kind of traditional, you know, newspapers and the journal reviews and that kind of thing and the trade media, but this person's really going to focus on blogs. Well, that's great because then that can free up your in-house publicist to maybe pitch more traditional media if they know that somebody else is doing blogs. It's not like, oh, great, I don't have to do any work. It's just, it's different work. And that way you're getting your money's worth because you are doubling the exposure or, you know, this person's going to work on setting up school visits for you or something else. But we always, when I was in-house, we worked really closely with the outside people and it was really great. And now, I mean, I err on the side of over asking, over deferring to the publisher just to make sure that I'm not interfering with pitches or plans or relationships or anything that they're doing. Like, you know, I'm going to, you know, there's a book that I'm working on where, you know, I'm supposed to have a certain thing. And then I was going to pitch something to Publisher Weekly. And I checked in with them to make sure that that wasn't going to be an issue because I don't want to step on, you know, they're the primary publicist.
Maybe we can do a lightning round. Okay. Because I don't know if these things belong to publicity or marketing.
Sure.
So awards, submissions.
Yeah, awards can be a hot potato at a publisher. I would say that most of the awards are submitted by education and library marketing or marketing. There are some consumer awards that might be handled by publicity. Again, it's totally different. You should just ask. And, you know, some awards carry hefty fees for submissions and some don't. So, you know, usually if an award does not have a fee and your book is eligible, it can be submitted. Yeah. So that's how that works. It's also, if you're a member of SCWI, you should definitely let your publisher know that because then that makes you eligible for something like the Golden Kite. So that kind of information is helpful. I don't think it ever hurts for your agent to say, hey, we just want to make sure that, you know, you're considering this book for XYZ award.
So cover reveals.
Yes, that's usually publicity.
So do you think that cover reveals are actually useful for every book?
No.
That was a leading question because obviously the answer is no.
I think they are helpful for some books. Yeah. I think they are helpful for some books. And obviously, you know, the big national media outlet cover reveals generally are helpful. But it's gotten very competitive.
So what about those national media, like let's say Entertainment Weekly, yeah. Who sets that up? How does that work?
Publicity, the publicist pitches that to the editors at the outlet like Entertainment Weekly and gauges their interest in it. Usually in order to even pitch it to a place like EW, it would need to be somebody of national prominence. It would need to be an author that they've covered before. It needs to be something that, you know, would appeal to their audience, but it's a pitch.
Right. So what is the best timing? I know. So I feel like a lot of publishers are moving away from doing those kinds of, you know, hustling to get those blog cover reveals or, you know, whatever, and just say, hey, why don't you put it on your own social media? But you know, whether it's on somebody else's blog or on your own social media, what's the best timing to do a cover reveal?
So this is really important. And it's sort of funny because when I was starting out in publicity, the hardest part of our jobs was getting the word out about books. Now, the hardest challenge sometimes is keeping the word in. You're going to hear the term metadata thrown around a lot. And this is sort of the information feed and information train where, you know, all the information that's, whether it's on, you know, IndieBound or Baker & Taylor or Amazon or Barnes & Noble or whatever, and all the online systems, that the title and the ISBN and the cover and all that stuff gets out there. And every house's timeline for that is different. It's handled differently. But if you're doing a reveal for something that's like a secret project, that's a, you know, a celebrity or a really high profile thing, you want to make sure that that information doesn't leak before the thing, but you also have to make sure that the information is then up immediately following the reveal so that people can pre-order the book. So similarly, for even if you're doing it on your own blog or on your own Twitter or social outlet or Instagram or whatever, you know, there is such a thing as too early. It's not helpful if your friends and family and fans can't then pre-order the book. And if you put it up there before that metadata has fed, then they might go to whatever online outlet or call their bookstore and they have no idea what they're talking about because it's not there yet. So it's really important to communicate with your editor to just find out when that is going to be, you know, when is it going in the catalog? When is it going to be on the online retailers? When is it going to be available from IndieBound? Because if you're going to post it, otherwise what happens if you do it too early is that your friends and family will see it. And then when you post about it 6 months later, there's kind of that, didn't that come out already? You know, yeah. I've been hearing about this book for 2 years, isn't it?
It's a missed opportunity. Yes.
It is a missed opportunity. And so making sure that that stuff's out there, you know, chances are no one's going to go searching for a book that they don't know that they should be searching for. So wait until it's up and then you can do your reveal and drive everybody to it and let people know, hey, you can pre-order. My book is now available for pre-order. Whether that's 8 months in advance, 6 months in advance, whatever it is, you can pre-order it from your local independent bookstore. You can pre-order it from your favorite online retailer and let them know that they can do that.
And also, update your website with all those buy links, including yeah. Please put IndieBound and your local store, because if I go to your books, your website, and I only see Amazon, I will be pissed.
Yes.
Especially yes. if I'm hosting you for an event. Yes. If an independent that. Bookstore is hosting you for an event, please, for the love of God, link to that bookstore.
From your lips. Yes, that is so important. It's so important.
Yeah. What about pre-order campaigns? Is that you or marketing?
It's mostly marketing. And again, there are big publisher-driven pre-order campaigns that have stuff and, you know, are really formal that can involve major retailers. And then there are smaller ones where you can connect with your local indie. And sometimes an author will create a bookmark or a postcard or a gizmo or something, or they'll, the first 100 copies, you'll sign them and, you know, you can get signed books from there and, you know, drive kind of all your friends and family to buy from your local indie. That can be a fantastic thing to do. But I would 100% connect with your publisher first before you do it, just to make sure that it's not in the way of anything. And that the sales rep, you know, if you know, my local bookstore is X and I'm buddies with them and they always do this, just to make sure that somebody lets the sales rep know so that they're not surprised when that happens. Because again, you just want as much support as possible.
Yeah. And I would say also, don't spend a ton of money on this.
Right.
Like, everybody likes to make swag and whatever. And yes, it's very cool.
Signed books are the best. I mean, that's the best thing.
Absolutely. Do you have any examples of authors or author illustrators that you think are absolutely killing it and doing an amazing job? And what sets them apart?
Well, that's a hard question, because in some cases it's, you know, their publisher that's, you know, getting a lot of this publicity. So, I mean, I feel like some of the authors that are just out there, you know, in such an amazing, exciting way, Jason Reynolds, obviously, Lori Hall Sanderson, Jenny Han, I would say Rick Riordan. Some of these, what is interesting to me about those authors is that they're huge. They're, every time they have a book, it's kind of an event. You know, Jenny Han's got everything happening on Netflix, and, you know, there are all these things, but they are so engaged with their fans directly on Twitter and social media, so that as big as they've gotten, they're still so accessible. And I think that that's helped keep their brands, you know, fresh and popular and growing and bigger than ever. You know,
absolutely.
None of those authors is an overnight sensation. You know, they've put in a ton of work over a long period of time to get to where they are. But they really continue to be engaged with their fans directly, which I think in both, you know, both in the sort of gatekeeper, bookseller, educator fans, but also consumer fans.
Well, first of all, they've all been doing at it for a decade or more,
at least
in some cases.
Yeah.
And many of them are, well, let's put it this way. Your debut picture book is not going to have the same kind of attention on it as a YA novel from Laurie Hall Sanderson. So, although it's great to admire these people, I wouldn't say that that's necessarily something you can plan for.
Right. And again, I mean, I was at Simon & Schuster for Jenny Hunt's debut, came out, really lovely book called Shug. And I love that book. And I was a huge fan of it then. And, you know, watching her star rise over time has been phenomenal. But that's not necessarily who to look to. Now, if you want to look to sort of not that level, some authors who I have admired for a long time, just for the way they engage on Twitter and have really developed followings that are very specific to their individual brands, in addition to the support that they get from their house, I think Kate Messner is phenomenal on Twitter. Kelly Yang, whose debut Front Desk came out from Scholastic 2 years ago now, is somebody who, you know, was a debut, but really established herself very quickly with a lot of movers and shakers in the industry and getting to know a lot of other authors, and has developed, I think, a really great engagement and brand. Lisa Yee is somebody who also was amazing on Twitter, very connected, and Jarrett Krasoska too. You know, these are authors who, you know, I mean, have had a lot of acclaim and everything else. But again, they're very engaged with their fan bases, and they're incredibly supportive and generous with praise for other authors. You know, they're not solely self-promotional, which I think is important, and have just grown and grown and grown their network, but also remain really engaged with other authors, with educators, with fans, and in a really lovely way.
Are there any new or soon to be forthcoming books you'd like to have us keep our eyes peeled for?
Well, sure. I've been working most recently with Becky Albertalli and Aisha Saeed on Yes, No, Maybe So, which is a really fantastic adult book of the moment, about love and resistance in the face of anti-Semitism and Islamophobia. It's about two teens in Atlanta who meet canvassing for a local candidate. And it's one of the things I love the most about it is that it's really about teens getting involved even when they're too young to vote, and that you really can affect change and make a difference even if you can't vote. And I love that.
And so timely.
Yes, very, very timely. And was directly inspired by the authors, you know, who are both very close friends and live in Atlanta. And it was inspired by they actually did canvassing for the first time after 2016. There was a special election in their district in Georgia. And so they did some canvassing. And so it really came completely out of their own experiences. And it's a lovely, lovely book. And I'm excited. I'm in June, I'm working on a picture book from Jules Feiffer called Smart George, which is a follow-up to Bark George, which came out almost 20 years ago. And I've actually worked with Jules Feiffer a couple of times. So when you talk about being an outside publicist, you know, and relationships or not, with authors, I worked with him on a book called I Lost My Bear about 20 years ago, and then another book called The Odious Ogre. So it's really fun to be reunited with Jules on a sequel to a book that I didn't work on, but really admire. So that's exciting. I hope that everybody is aware that there's a new Hunger Games book coming out in May called The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. And I'm happy to be continuing to work on all things Hunger Games which is exciting. And then actually there's a book from Candlewick coming out in the fall. So this is like a preview that I'm very excited about. That's called Flying Paintings, and it's written by Amy Alsnauer, and it's illustrated by the Zhou brothers. And it's a picture book biography of these internationally renowned Chinese American artists, the Zhou brothers, who divide their time between Chicago, which is where I am now, and China. And, but unusually, they have illustrated it, and then they are illustrating their own story, which is pretty unusual for famous artists of a picture book biography. And it's, they're known for really contemporary style. This is a much more intimate representational style for them, and really telling their immigrant story in a way that they've never really told. So that's one that I'm very excited about that has a Chicago angle to it.
And I will say, in the last podcast, I interviewed Kate Messner, and we talked a bit about Chirp, which is her latest book, and now it is officially out in the world. So everyone should go buy it, please.
Yes, it is. I've read Chirp, and it's incredible. And that's another one that people should absolutely look for.
It's a middle grade Me Too mystery set on a cricket farm, and it works well on so many levels. It's both like heart-wrenching and also funny and delightful. It's a mystery, but it's also sort of manifesto for speaking up. And it's a great book, and Kate's an amazing author.
She is, and so versatile.
Yes. So I asked this of all my guests, my final question, what are you obsessed with right now? It does not have to be bookish, but it can be. I will go first so that you can have time to gather your thoughts. So my obsession is absolutely ridiculous. For the past few days, I've been binge watching this dumb show on Netflix called The Circle. It's about a group of people who are locked in an apartment building, each in their own apartment, and can only communicate with each other via a social media app called The Circle. They can group chat with each other. They can private message each other. They play games and do various silly challenges. And then every day, the app chooses two influencers, the most popular people in the circle, who can choose to block one person and kick them out. The thing is, some people are playing absolutely as themselves, and some people are catfishing. That is, they've chosen new personas that they think will be more popular with everyone. So the first episode I saw, I was like, what is this? I hate it. It was like 9 annoying people talking to screens. Like, what? And then I kept watching for some reason, and by the end, I was completely in love with all the people, fake personas and all. It was really fascinating to see how the different ways to play the game were perceived by everyone. Like, the moral of the story is the most genuine people got the farthest, although one notable catfisher did go all the way to the finale, but in no small part because it was a guy pretending to be a girl, and he got really emotional and really made true friends. And anyway, people responded well to that. But, it was a very interesting social experiment, and I was officially obsessed with it.
Sounds cool.
Kind of. I mean, very much. You're watching it, and you're like, oh, this isn't good for my brain. But but it's fun anyway. Tracy, what are you obsessed with right now?
Well, one of the big changes in my life since I moved from New York to Chicago is that I have a car. And so I'm obsessed with audiobooks right now. And through the Libby app from Overdrive, I have been borrowing all kinds of audiobooks, and I've been really catching up on a lot of adult books that I had intended to read and hadn't. And I especially love when the books are read by the author. And so a couple of books that I've read recently, I read The Library Book by Susan Orlean, which if you're a book person, oh my goodness, it's so good. I read On Earth We're Briefly Gorgeous by Ocean Vuong, which also is read by him. And it's just incredible, incredible. I read Educated by Tara Westover. And then I have read a couple of children's books here and there. I actually reread Esperanza Rising by Pam Munoz-Ryan, which I have to say in our current political climate was even more moving than it was the first time I read it. And it's just an extraordinary book. And so I've just been devouring audiobooks.
Nice.
That's what I'm obsessed with.
That's great. Tracy, thank you so much for spending all this time with me.
It's been my pleasure. I hope I've helped maybe to demystify some things about, publicity and marketing. And, here's to more and more coverage of children's books everywhere.
Yay! Thank you to my guest, Tracy Van Stratton. And thanks to you, dear listeners. You can find links to Tracy's company as well as info on the books we discussed today in the show notes on my website, jenniferloughran.com/literaticast. Don't forget, the Literaticast has a Patreon, patreon.com/literaticast. Throw in a buck if you like the show. It helps me continue to be able to produce them. And if you like the show, consider writing a review on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcatcher. Reviews help more people find the show. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.